Hi, my name's John. I'm an addict and alcoholic.
Hi, John.
It's my first time at this meeting, so I don't really know any of you. But somebody knew I had a year today, and they kind of tricked me into coming up here. Actually, I thought I had a year 6 months ago. But somebody got me to confess to something I did before that I didn't consider a relapse, but after debating about it, about 50% of the people I talked to agreed with me that it was, and about 50% of people said it was a relapse or a slip behavior. But just, I decided to change my sobriety date just to be, you know, on the safe side, I guess, and, you know, what the hell, it's... I'm, you know, like someone told me tonight, I'm living in the now anyway, so it's now that matters anyway, right? So, it doesn't, you know, I'm not here trying to, you know, stacking up times only in my own ego, I guess. So, I got a year on the 18th, and, I haven't been going to a lot of meetings lately, so maybe getting up here and sharing is something I needed. So I'm glad that he kind of got me up here. Thanks a lot.
Hello, my name's Monty, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Monty.
2 years ago, I was on my way to an AA meeting, and I was doing the program my way. I thought, I'll just have one beer. It's not a big thing. One beer couldn't possibly hurt. I ended up getting mugged down on Market Street, getting beaten over the head with my own half-gallon bottle of vodka. I was bewildered. I did. A year ago, I was at this meeting, and I was sitting somewhere in the back there, standing up. I was cowering in fear lest somebody know that a year had passed, and I hadn't had a drink for a full year. I was still scared. I was panicked. I thought that the magic was going to go away. It hasn't gone away. It's still here. It's been 2 years since I've had a drink. I thank the person that tried to mug me. I thank the guy that told me that if I would do the steps, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, if I would get down on my knees where indicated, if I would just ask for help and admit that the program my way didn't work, the program your way did work, I thank him very much, and I thank my Almighty God for letting me be here. Thank you.
My name is Michael Kiesling. I'm an alcoholic. 11 years ago today in Naples, Italy, Alcoholics Anonymous found me. And I didn't know I wanted to be found. How Alcoholics Anonymous found me, my second wife was leaving for the third time. I asked her what I could do to save the marriage, and she said, move out. I did. Today, life is a celebration, and every day is a holiday, and every day is a birthday, but there are some significant points in my sobriety. This morning, I got a cake from two people whom I love very much, an Alcoholics Anonymous, and they happen to live in Naples, Italy, today, and I got sober there 11 years ago today. I met them in Guam 8 years ago. So it's a small world in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to tell you, you can be happy, joyous, and free in this life. And if you came to Alcoholics Anonymous to be happy, joyous, and free, you'll find it. If you came to find anything else, you'll find that too. I found a wife here. I found divorce here. I found sadness here. I found bankruptcy here. I found pain here. I'd like to tell you that you can stay sober through almost anything. In the last 2 years, My stepdaughter was run over by a car, multiple compound fractures of the left leg. About a month and a half later, a man tried to kill my wife. 9 months later, my mother died of a terminal disease called cancer. Very painful, very slow death. 2 months later, my dad died of loneliness. 16 days later, I spread their ashes out at the end of Point Loma. And the next day, I retired from the Navy after 22 years without a job. I had a monthly mortgage payment of around $1,400 a month. 7 days later, I was employed. I had 300 resumes out and only one job interview, and I was hired. And it works when you do the footwork. I'd like to tell you, I'm going through another divorce. It isn't fun, and I'm sober. And it's because of you as my support system. This is your 11 years. It's not mine. I've suited up and showed up, and you guys have carried me. And a lot of times, new people come in, and I get to carry them. Sobriety to me is service, and I've learned how to serve today. And this is a fun meeting. God bless you all.
Get me confused. Here at Old Town Speakers, we celebrate different periods of sobriety. And tonight, Karen's going to hand out tokens. Yay! Okay, if you have 30 days but less than 60 days of continuous sobriety, come on up and get a token. Yay! Hi, Dave.
Hi, I'm Chris, an alcoholic.
Hi, Chris.
My name is
Dwayne.
Hi,
Dwayne.
Hi, Catherine.
I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Catherine.
My name is Dale, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dale.
My name is
Gene,
I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kathy.
My name is Michael, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Michael.
Hi,
Bob.
I'm Frank. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Frank.
I'm Andy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Andy.
My name is Daryl. I'm an alcoholic.
All right. If you have 60 days but less than 90 days, come on up and get a token. Yay, all right.
Hi, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
I'm Steve, and I'm an alcoholic in Greenwood.
Hi, Steve. All right. If you have 90 days but less than 6 months, come on up and get a token. Hey.
I've got 5 minutes.
All right.
I need to know the drug addict and alcoholic.
Hi, Noel.
I'm Bill, an alcoholic.
Hi, Bill.
I'm Mike, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mike.
I'm Dale, an alcoholic.
Hi, Dale.
My name is Dennis, I'm from the Creek Ranch, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dennis.
My name is Charlie, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Charlie.
I'm Toby, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Toby.
I'm Ray Buscom. I'm on
Hi.
My name is Patrick. I'm very bad at being called.
If you have 6 months but less than 9 months, come on up and get a token. All right.
I am Robert, I'm at home.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, I'm Alan, I'm at home.
Hi, Alan.
I'm Ruth, I'm at home.
Hi, Ruth.
alcoholic.
Hi.
I'm Jane, an alcoholic.
Hi, Jane.
I'm Liz, an alcoholic.
Hi, Liz.
I'm Robin,
alcoholic.
Hi, Robin.
My name's Tim. I'm an alcoholic. I did this once, but my sponsor told me to do it again, so I'm just following directions. Thank you. I'm an alumni from the Freedom Ranch. Thank you.
All right. If you have 9 months but less than 1 year, come on up and get a token. Yay, all right. Hi, Bill. Congratulations to everyone.
Thank you, Tina. Tonight, our 5-minute speaker is Jim.
Thanks. My name's Jim, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. I say that because today, and for a number of 24 hours, I have not needed to pick up a drink. And I know for probably some newcomers that might sound very strange, but my story is a long one. I'm not going to go into it. I just want to talk about a few things of what happened to me when I came into the fellowship. On a cold January night many years ago, I took a walk down to what is called the Bowery in New York City. I'm sure a lot of you have heard about it. In my mind, I was there long before I got there physically. And I did not drink on the Bowery. I got involved in a program called Operation Bowery, and they suggested that I come to AA meetings. And I wish I could say as soon as they suggested it, I came. I did not. It took me maybe about a month on the Bowery, being very afraid, not drinking, I guess more or less white-knuckling it. And finally, I came to a meeting one night over at a group we call St. Luke's in Manhattan. And I always like to remind myself, and that's being a little selfish, I know, of what I felt like and what I looked like the night that I walked into my first meeting. I was several pounds lighter than I am now. I had long, dirty hair. I was a late-blooming hippie. I hadn't washed in I don't know how long because I was afraid to take a shower. I didn't know, and I was afraid to ask, that there was a shower in the Bowery-type hotel that I was living in, gratis of the city of New York. And I had clothes on. The coat was much too big for me. I had another jacket underneath. That was too big for me. It was dirty, and I was very cold, and I felt dirty inside, outside. And along with that, I didn't care whether I lived or I died. And I can tell you tonight that all that has changed because I listen to you people. I listen to people get up here, just like the gentleman did tonight, Mike, and talk about what he went through staying sober, and they didn't pick up a drink. And gradually, I decided that I would try it. You know, I was coming, and I say this in case anybody is here tonight, and they're coming for whatever reasons they're here. I was coming because it would look good on my record. This was a city agency, and therefore, if I stayed dry and I kept my nose clean, then this counselor would have to get me a good city job and that. And that's why I was coming. And then gradually it sort of got that, well, maybe I'll stay for a year and I'll get it all together and I'll get the good job and then I'll go back to drinking my martinis, you know. And thank God till this day I haven't needed to pick up a martini. In fact, I've had more highs since I've been sober than I ever had when I was drinking. Just a few of the things that I lost as a result of drinking. I went to college because I wanted to be somebody. and I lost my degree because alcohol interfered with me getting my degree. I got some good jobs. I got a teaching job one time for the state of New York. I was told that I was very good, even though I was in the height of my alcoholism at the time. I was still functioning very well at that particular time. And I was told, go ahead, find out what you need to get your degree. You can have the job until you're ready to retire. What did I do? I went down to New York, and I drank every weekend. And I also drank in one of the local, several of the local bars up in the little town that I lived in. I also belonged to the American Legion because the drinks were a lot freer there. And that. I lost that job. Somebody came along and had it. And it was after that that I went down to New York City. And me, with my big ego and my arrogance and everything, I couldn't ask for help. Some people were suggesting that maybe I had a problem with alcohol, and I told them, no, I can handle it. What did I do? I started washing dishes. I washed dishes for about the next, I guess it's about 15 years. I have not cleared up enough to really know just how long it was, and it really doesn't matter. All I know that if there is a hell, that was part of my hell. I also mopped up a lot of bars, and when I was mopping up these bars, there were two songs towards the end there that I would play on the jukebox, and one of them was Frank Sinatra's My Way, and the other one was Barbara Streisand's People Who Need People. And as I played that one, I would start crying, and that because I was my drinking was very lonely. I drank a long time, and I drank most of that time was very lonely. So I came into these rooms, and I wasn't an alcoholic. I had other problems. My natural mother had been an alcoholic. My adoptive parents had died. They didn't leave me a lot of money. I was bitter, and I couldn't get a decent job. Nobody had given me a break. You know, the usual story that a lot of us have. But I found out that if I didn't pick up a drink one day at a time, that things started looking better. And I started using the Serenity Prayer and all those various things that were in my life. And I can say today that my life is much improved. It's improved when I use those steps and try and make those steps part of my life. When I start getting arrogant again and start doing it my way again, then I get into trouble. For a lot of my life, I did some geographics. I ran away. And at the end of my drinking, I couldn't get out of about an 8-block area because I was afraid. That's not true anymore. As a lot of some of you know, I just moved out here from New York City, and I'm very happy finding such a wonderful group of AA people here. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Hi, everyone. My name is Beverly Douglas, and I am an alcoholic. And very proud to stand here before you tonight and tell you that I'm a sober woman alcoholic. This wasn't the case a little over 27 years ago. I stood in a mental institution at that time. And I had been out on one of these little day trips that they let you out on occasionally if you've been on your good behavior. And I see some grins on some faces around here, so I know you've been there. And it was aboard a fishing boat, and they were serving little booze aboard the boat that particular day, and other patients were drinking it, so I naturally had a few myself. And needless to say, by the time we got back to the hospital, I was quite drunk. Now, there was one woman on our ward, and for some unknown reason, I was immediately attracted to this woman immediately when she came upon our ward. But she was being treated for something a little bit different than the rest of us were, and it was something that they called alcoholism. And I had never heard of it before. But anyway, when I got back up to my room that evening, she followed me into my room. And she looked over at me and she said, Beverly, I think you're an alcoholic. Well, I want you to know I've never been so insulted in all my life. And I told her in no uncertain terms that she needn't lay her thing on me that, by God, I was crazy. And the sad part of it was is that I really meant it. I would rather have been called crazy than to have been called an alcoholic, whatever in the heck that was. And in fact, I was so insulted that as soon as I got a chance to see my own psychiatrist the next day, I informed him of what Lenore had to say to me. And I said, "Now, Dr. Valentine," I said, "what do you think about that?" And he looked at me and he shook his head and he said, "No, Beverly," he said, "if you can just learn to face reality, and if you can just learn to cope with some of your problems, I can't see where you have any problem with alcohol." Well, hell, he was the boss, and it sure sounded right to me. So needless to say, I was to continue on drinking for a while. Now, tonight, I'm going to talk about a big book that we call Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you'll notice, that's what it's called, is Alcoholics Anonymous. It was written by alcoholics, for alcoholics, about alcoholism and how the alcoholic, the things that he needs to know to stay away from the first drink. And I don't want to get into any background today on you know, how I worked up to this thing. I'll try to run through a little bit as briefly as possible, simply to identify as an alcoholic for you before I get in to my program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a blackout drinker. I started drinking at the age of 13, and as most of you can tell, I don't speak English. I speak Southern. And, you know, it was so nice because out here everybody kept saying you got a twang to your talk and you talk a little bit funny. And my husband and I were privileged to speak down in Memphis here a couple of weeks ago, and God, it was so nice to be with people that spoke English, you know. Anyway, I started drinking at 13, and by the time I was 16, I was a blackout drinker. Now, I was also pregnant and married, just in that order. And in the days when I was growing up, nice girls didn't do those things, whatever they were. I got to tell you, you know, I said I was a blackout drinker. Would you believe me when I tell you I was almost 4 months pregnant before I even knew I'd been had? I kid you not. I was waitressing at the time, and I would serve a breakfast and then go throw up and serve a breakfast and go throw up. You know how that goes. And the boss came over to me, and he said, "Beverly," he informed me that it really wasn't too conducive for good business and suggested that I might see a doctor, and I did. And I went into my doctor, and he finished with me, and he says, "Now I want to see you in my office." And I said, "Okay, Dr. Moses." And I went in. And he sat back in one of these big swivel rocker chairs, you know, and he was a big man anyway, and he folded his arms across his chest, and he sat there, and he looked at me, and he said, "Beverly, you are pregnant." I mean, you know. Well, I thought about that for a few minutes, and I just leaned over the desk and looked him right straight in the eye, and I said, "Dr. Moses, I can't be. I've never been with a man." Well, he sat there and looked at me for a few minutes, and he leaned over the table and looked me right straight back in the eye and informed me I was not the second Virgin Mary. I was real sorry to hear that. Anyway, I did marry this man, and life went on, and it was a bad marriage. 6 years later, I had lost the first child. I did have a second one. You see, I found out what caused the pregnancy the first time. Now, I didn't quit doing what caused it. I just didn't get pregnant anymore after that. Anyway, I went through a divorce, and mother sent me a one-way ticket. She was smart mama. And I came from Florida out here to California. And I stayed single for a few years because, you see, I had learned one of the things that you don't do is you don't go to bed with men first. You marry them first. Now, I'm going to be carrying a message here tonight, so everybody pay attention because I want you to learn. Anyway, by the time my daughter was only 6 weeks old when I divorced this man, and you get this, when I divorced him because the doctors had said that he was an habitual drunkard, and I did not want my child raised under those conditions. Little realizing where this kid was going to end up at. Anyway, I spent the next 4 years single. And then finally, I did meet a young Irish Catholic boy about 4 years ago. I decided this kid needed a father, and I needed a husband. And I married this young Irish Catholic. Now, we all know that all Irish Catholics are all alcoholics. Hell, they're all here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I married the only Irish Catholic in the world, I think, that didn't drink. Now, I don't know how I managed that one, because I'm quite sure even at that age in life I was in the throes of alcoholism. And we had been married only a short period of time, and he came home from work one night, and he looked down at me in my usual position, and he said, Beverly, he said, I can't stand this any longer. And he said, you're going to have to give up this alcohol, or I'm going to have to leave you. So I said goodbye to Paul. And anyway, Mom and I were back together again. Now, you know, when you go into clubhouses, you're going to read upon the walls, you know, a lot of little cliches like think, and first things first, and those kind of things. You may not be familiar with cliches, but I was, because, you see, my mama used to say them all the time. From the time I was a little kid, I remember her saying them, and one of them was, if you don't succeed at first, try again. Now, Mama was coming out of her fourth marriage when I was coming out of my second one. Well, Mama just didn't say cliches. She lived them. You know, she really believed in them. And anyway, we had gotten home from work this one particular night, and she looked over at me, and she says, you know, honey, she said, we really ought to get ourselves some kind of business to ensure Charlotte, her granddaughter, my daughter, a more secure future. Well, hell, it sounded like a real good idea to me, and I had a little bit of cash saved, and Mama had a AAA credit rating, so we did. We bought ourselves a business, a liquor store. Damn, I tell you. And the fun really began. Because, you see, I was into the morning drink by this time, very much so. And instead of going from sick to well, I was now going from sick to drunk. If you've ever been there, you know what I'm talking about. And I knew I had to do something about it because I had this child to support, and you know, we had this business, and you know, and all these things. I was a moving drunk, and I was had gotten where I couldn't function. Well, along about this time, I fell in love again. Well, what I really did was fall in heat. But you see, I wasn't aware of that then. I mean, being in heat was being in love to me. You identify. I mean, you don't think that I was wrong? Okay. Anyway, this man introduced me to a thing called the barley sandwich. I mean, you don't know what a barley sandwich is? Let me tell you what a barley sandwich is. That's beer and tomato juice. You get your booze and your vitamins at the same time with that, you know. And it would sort of slide me into the day, and it was working for me for a while. And so, you know, things went along. Now, I did marry this man. You notice I marry all these men, you know. Anyway, I'm a one-man gal. I take my men one at a time. I'm not, you know, I just go one at a time. Anyway, I did marry this man, and we had only been married a short period of time, and I began to have some funny symptoms. And the doctors ended up telling me that what I was having was epileptic seizures, and that I was in the midst of a nervous breakdown. Now, you and I both know that what I was having was alcoholic convulsions. And manic depressive, yeah, I guess I was. The odd thing of it was, though, is when I finally got here to you people, the manic depression lifted when I gave up the alcohol. Isn't that funny? And I didn't have any more convulsions. Now, what I found out from that was that alcohol will induce the same exact symptoms so closely that even doctors and psychiatrists many times cannot tell the difference. Because you see, this manic depression was induced by this alcohol I had been drinking, and once I stopped drinking, it disappeared. Now, what I also found out from that and working with other alcoholics is that alcoholism will cover up a mental and emotional illnesses that you cannot tell they're there. And when you stop drinking, you know, if some of these symptoms begin to appear, our book tells us, you know, we're not doctors, psychiatrists, lawyers, or any of these things, or marriage counselors. You know, so for God's sake, if you're having any problems after you've been sober for about 6 months or so, get yourself to a doctor or psychiatrist and find out what it is. Anyway, it was through that. Through the doctors there that I finally got to UCLA up on that fifth floor in that nut ward, if y'all will pardon the expression. And it was there that I heard the first message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, as I said, I did not quit drinking at that point. I was to continue on for another 3.5 years. Now, I'd like to talk about my moment of clarity because I never want to forget what happened to me that night. You see, I had tried all kinds of churches, and I had tried psychiatry, and I had tried medical doctors, and God knows I've tried enough husbands, you know, and they didn't do it. So anyway, I just didn't know what to do, and And you see, I never considered alcohol being the problem. It was always that son of a bitch I was married to, you know, or that job I was working, or, you know, or whatever. But I never even considered alcohol. But I was sitting in our home. In fact, I still live in that home today in Chatsworth. And my daughter was away for the weekend, and the man that I was married to at that time had, he was about 6 or 7 hours late. Hell, we girls all know where you guys are when you're 6 or 7 hours late coming home from work. They're out there with the one who understands them. Don't laugh, honey, because some of us were the ones who understood them. I'll tell you. Anyway, I was sitting there, and I decided to have a drink. Now, I had, you know, hell, Mom and I owned a liquor store, but I had a supply, a hidden supply, and yet we had all the booze in the house that you could possibly imagine, but I went up to my supply. I got to tell, this is for the girls. You guys can turn off for a few minutes. If in here we sometimes have scouts. You don't know what a scout is. I can see that. Okay. You've seen these old Western movies where the wagon trains come out to the west here. And in every wagon train, there's always a scout that goes out ahead of the wagon train. And he looks around to make sure that there's no Indians out there and that it's safe to proceed ahead. Well, that's what we have in here. And some of you are men and some of you may be women, you know. And if you're going to be one and you get out there, you know, I had a supply, a hidden supply that nobody ever found. Now, they found most of them, but this one they never found. And when I went up this night, when I first found this, it was a little box about this size, and it just was a 12-pack size box. And in that little box, I could get a half pint. Well, by the time this particular night rolled around, just prior to getting here to you people, I had graduated to 48-size box. And in that one, I could get two fifths. I had one down on each side of it. And that way, I had one coming and one going all the time. Now, that was a box of Kotex. You know, with all the improvements they've made on everything these days, I sure hope that they still have that 48-size box. God, what a shame that would be, because they never found that hiding place. But anyway, I went up and I got into my supply and I fixed myself a drink, and I'd only had one or two, and he come home, you know, and he looked over at me and he said, "You're drunk, and I'm not going to take you anywhere tonight." And with that, he went on up into the bedroom and passed out. So I fixed myself another drink, and I was very hurt and very disgusted about a lot of things by this time. And anyway, I remember standing there looking out through the kitchen window in the driveway, and there were two new cars sitting in that driveway. And I walked around into our home, and our home was a new home at that time, and it was newly decorated. And, you know, it was the kind of a home that if you opened up the book of Better Homes and Gardens, you would have seen my home in there, or one like that. And I walked on out into the backyard, and it was well manicured in a beautiful landscaped backyard. In fact, it was the kind of a yard that you would see that belonged to the home that belonged in that book of the Better Homes and Gardens. And in fact, if you've seen us as a family, we presented that front. And we looked like that family that belonged in that yard, that belonged in that home, that belonged in that book of the Better Homes and Gardens, you know, and that's the way it was. And yet, as I stood there in that yard that night with my drink in my hand, and I looked up and I said, "Why, God, why now, when I've got everything that I've always wanted, why do I want to die?" And I couldn't have told you that night, but tonight I can. What good is all you've got, all of those things that we so desperately, you know, sell our very souls for, you know, if there is no joy in them? And you see, that's where I was. Alcohol had taken all of the joy out of my life and had taken me into a living hell. And I could find no way out. And I think that Christ said something like that when he said, "What profits a man who gains the world and then loses his very soul?" And that's where I was. And I remember walking on down into the rumpus room, and as I sat there with another drink in my hand, I looked at that drink, and for the first time in my life, I was fully aware that it was the alcohol that had taken me into this living hell. Now, what do you do when you can't keep on drinking and you can't stop drinking? I did the only thing I knew to do that night. I killed myself. Now, I say that facetiously. However, our book talks about a rebirth, being reborn. And I believe for me that that was my beginning, was that night. It took them 3.5 days to bring me back to life. I woke up and I was in County General Hospital, and County General Hospital is a long ways from Chatsworth. And when I woke up, of course, you don't know where in the hell you're at. It's just like coming to, you know. And I had tubes out my nose, my throat, both arms, and both ankles. And I'm looking around trying to find out where in the hell I'm at, and some cop was standing there in the doorway, and I asked him. And he looked down at me, and he said, "You're in County General Hospital." And I said, "Well, how in the world did I get here? We have insurance. We have money. I live in Chatsworth." And he looked at me with the most disgusted look, and he said, "A lady committing suicide's against the law." I didn't know that. Anyway, I remember telling this in a meeting one night. We have one of our members down in the valley that has, since being sober, is sitting on the appellate court. And he came up to me after the meeting, after I'd finished talking, and he said, "Beverly," he said, "you just gave a wonderful, warm talk tonight." And he said, "but I'd just like to make just one little small correction on it." He said, "Committing suicide is not against the law." He said, "It's attempting suicide that's against the law." Oh, that made good sense. So I thanked him very much. Anyway, it was through this that my psychiatrist sent word to me. He said, "Beverly, I want to see you." And he said, "You need help, and you need it desperately, and I can't help you." Now, I came, he gave me the number of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got home, I called that number. And I couldn't, I remembered, I don't know who it was that I talked to, but I do remember it was a woman. And she said something like this to me. She said, "Honey," she said, "are you having a problem with alcohol?" She didn't ask me if I was an alcoholic, and I said, "I sure am." And she said, "Are you drinking right now?" Well, I looked around, and I didn't see anything sitting there, and I said, "Well, no, not right at the moment." And she said, "Well, can you hang on for a little while?" And I said, "If you'll make it quick." So anyway, these two women did come out, and one of them had about 2 weeks of sobriety. And she came along with an older member on the program who had about 4 years at that time. In fact, I just talked with one of them today. She's just had cancer surgery, and we weren't sure that she was going to pull through because it was in the lung, and it was very deep, and it was right up underneath the heart, and they were a little bit worried about it. And we got word yesterday that they got it all, and she's not even going to have any follow-up treatment. And I think that that was due to our prayers here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a great believer in prayer and the strength of it. But anyway, she's doing fine. But these two women came to my home, and every time I would ask them a question, they'd start talking to each other. It was, "Yeah, Joe, do you remember this?" And, "Yeah, Virginia, do you remember that?" And they were there for over 2 hours, and I never got to tell them anything about that son of a bitch I was living with and my problems, you know. And finally, they decided to go, I guess, you know, and they got up, and they turned around and looked at me as if I was an afterthought, you know, and said, "You be dressed. We're coming by to get you and take you to a meeting at 8 o'clock. Well, they never even asked me if I wanted to go, you know. But anyway, they came, and we went. And that was my beginning into Alcoholics Anonymous. And from now on, I'm going to talk about what right here is in this book and what I had to learn. This is not necessarily what you may have to learn or where your problems were, but it was the things, you know, where I was at and the things that I had to learn that were necessary for me to stay sober. Now, I have some pet peeves, and I'm going to get one of them out right now. I hear a lot of people say something like this: "Well, today I have been sober of X number of days, months, or years, and I no longer have a drinking problem." Well, if you be an alcoholic of my kind and somebody says something like that to you, for Christ's sake, run. When I came to you a little over 22 years ago, I was dying from alcoholism. I got living problems. You damn right I got living problems. Hell, I'm alive. Do you know of anybody that doesn't? You know, you don't have to be an alcoholic to have living problems. All you got to do is just stay alive, you know. I am still just as much of an alcoholic today as I was the day I walked through the doors. And the day I ever forget that, this drunk is just liable to be back on the juice again. I don't want that to happen to me. My primary problem is alcoholism. Now, in this book, it says if we are to overcome drinking, there has to be a transformation of thought and attitude. Well, that's nice to know, but how do you get it, and what does it mean, you know? Oh, and I had one of those kind of sponsors that says, you know, because they told me to get one, and I did. Because I'll tell you why. Because in this book, you're going to find words like absolutely, precisely, exactly, and it even goes on to say on page 29 that further on we give clear-cut directions. Now, that just doesn't leave any room for the fertile imagination of an alcoholic to run around in. I mean, you know, they got you right off bat. And, you know, another thing I want to tell you, and this is especially for the newcomers, I want to smarten you up. It took me over 4 years to learn this. Have you ever called your sponsor up when you were just totally flying up your own ass? And they say to you, honey, read the book. The answers are in the book. Let me tell you why they tell you that. They don't know where the answer is in the book. Took me a while to get wise to that one. And in fact, my sponsor had told me to buy this book, so I did. And you know how we are when we're new. You know, we just come into the program. I bought the book, and I have a glass-top coffee table, and I laid my big book right in the center of it, you know, and I got my little pamphlets, and I laid them on the end tables and around, you know. And she was over there one day, you know, and she was sitting there in front of that coffee table, and she reached over, and she took her hand like that and dusted it off, you know. And she said, and honey, in case I forgot to tell you, she said, read the book. She was, you know, she was that kind of sponsor that says, thou shalt have no other gods before me. That's it. She was a whip, I'll tell you. Anyway, I got into this book and I started reading it. Now, another pet peeve I have, and I'll get through with those for a few minutes anyway, is that I get a little people that say, you can work this program any way you want to. Just work good. Glad to hear that. You can just work it any way you want to. Well, now, I've got a book in here, and, you know, if anybody has an argument with me, come and tell me what it is, because I'll give you a page number to look up, okay? It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. One path. One path. Many ways to work it. One path. Now, I got back in this book again. What is that path? What are they talking about? You know, did you ever ask yourself any of these questions? I didn't know to ask these when I first got here. But as I began to study it, I kept saying, well, what in the world are they talking about? And my sponsor wouldn't, you know, she wouldn't tell me anything other than read the book, honey, read the book, you know. So I had to begin to learn for myself. So I got in and I started reading it. Well, let me tell you what I found in there, what that path is. It says, a lack of power is our dilemma. A lack of power. And to find this power that will solve our problem is exactly what this book is all about. No room for the fertile imagination to run around in. That's exactly what this book is all about. To find this power greater than ourselves, it's going to solve our problem. That transformation of thought and attitude. And this is how it came about. Now, I was iffy when I got here, you know, about God. And I didn't know whether I believed or I didn't believe, but y'all kept saying, act as if. Well, I thought that was kind of funny, too, because I felt that that was kind of phony, you know, and I didn't want to be a phony, God forbid. But then I remembered a little something I had remembered reading as a child, and it went something like this. I would rather live my life as though there was a God and die and find out that there wasn't, than to live my life as though there was no God and then die and find out that there was. Scared the hell out of me when I remember that one. You know. And early on in life, I found out for me, drunk or sober, there is two things that will cause me to take an action, and that's fear and pain. Fear and pain, drunk or sober, will cause me to take some kind of an action. And I was filled with a lot of fear at that moment when I remembered that, so I began to act as if, got a little phony in there. But I found out that it worked. Now, this path, higher power, and I began to put that together, and then I began to hear words like spiritual, spiritual path, spiritual program. And here it says, we have written a book which we believe to be moral as well as spiritual. Well, again, I had to come back and ask myself the question, what did that mean to me? And again, I don't believe that my drunkenness is a moral issue, but I do believe that my sobriety is. So it behooved me to find out what my morals were. Well, I had to go back and get on this spiritual path. Well, the word spiritual had the connotation of religion to me, and I had tried all kinds of religion. I knew they didn't work. So what am I going to do with this word spiritual? You know, it's very difficult for me to accept it. And so I got into the dictionary because my sponsor had told me to use the dictionary, and what I found in there that opened up my mind, that worked for me, was a connotation that it gave, a definition. It says spirituality is an elevation of thought and feeling. In order for an alcoholic to overcome his alcoholism, there has to be a transformation of thought and attitude. And that was where it was to come from. Now, on farther on this same page where it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path, down there at for the end of that page, it says that there are three conditions before we can even begin to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Up to now, we're learning. But right there, it says that there are three conditions. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. And those steps are the 12 spiritual steps of this program. Now, I was told, you know, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness were things that I had to understand and that I had to have if I was even going to begin this program. Now, I found out for me that in the first step, the moment I admitted that I was an alcoholic out loud to people, and I accepted the fact that I was powerless over alcohol, somehow within me there began to come an inner strength that I had never had before when it came to alcohol. And I was able to stay away from that first drink. And in the second step, the open-mindedness that I found for me, and I'm talking about principles now that I had begun to find here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the open-mindedness doesn't say that we have to buy it all right now. I didn't have to buy God. I didn't have to buy spirituality. I didn't have to buy the 12 steps. What I had to do was to have an open mind about these things. I came to believe. And then the willingness. Now, you'll find that your first two steps are your basic steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in the big book, it calls it the cornerstone, which is the foundation of your program. And in the third step, when I got up to there, it said that this one is the keystone and that it must be firmly in place. Well, I didn't know what these words meant. God, you know, they're talking a whole new language in this program. So again, I went back to my dictionary and I looked up the word keystone. And in there it says that a keystone is that brick. If you can envision an archway, because that third step is our archway to freedom. And if you can envision an archway and placing a stone in that archway, your beginning stone, everything else is built around that stone. Our very lives, our very program is dependent upon how well we take that step and use it in our lives. And you see, when I say take that step and use it in our lives, I'm talking about I don't care how much you read this book. I don't care how much you spout about it in meetings or from podiums like this. Until you take it and bring it into your life and apply it in your daily life, it has no value, none whatsoever. It's only words. So I made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of God as I understood Him. And along about that same year, which was about my third year, I went through a divorce. And you heard this one girl get up here tonight and say that she was from a place called the Allenest. And that's down in the valley where we live. And when my sponsor had first got a hold of me, she said, Beverly, she said, I want you to get a good, firm foundation on this program. I don't want you making any major decisions for at least a year. And in your case, you're sicker than most. I want you to wait at least 3. Kid you not, that's what she said. And she said, and I don't want you getting emotionally involved. And then she added a little addendum on the bottom of that. And she said, and by the way, honey, there is a clubhouse in this valley called the Allenest. And I want you to stay away from there because there is a bunch of dirty old men there helping women with their spiritual program. Right, Mary? I didn't have any trouble. I never went around the nest for the first 3 years. And then I went through this divorce. Hell, I'm not dumb. You know where I went. You better believe it. Man, I just hightailed it right on over that owl nest, quick as I could get there. I was just like a kid in the candy store. I said, I'll have him, 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 and him. Boy, you know. Oh, it was wonderful. But then fear cropped up in my life, because I was in heat again. Oh, God. Sound like I got a little secondary problem here? Oh, y'all have one too, huh? Say it takes one to know one. Yeah. A little identification going on. You better believe it. Well, I'll tell you, I didn't know what to do, but I'm thinking now. I'm sober. And when you watch an alcoholic get sober and he begins to think, watch out, because he's in trouble. And I'm thinking, now, how can I overcome this? Because I'm afraid that if I get laid, I'm going to get emotionally involved, and then I'm going to get back on the juice again. And God knows I didn't want to end up there again. So I'm thinking. Now, I've begun to pick up some babies along about this time. And I figured it out, what to do, how to overcome this problem I had. You see, I found out that I was not the only one with this problem. I have found, I don't care whether you're 9 or 99, when you walk through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, you got two problems. And that's bad breath and a broken heart. Booze and sex in a plainer language, if you will, please. I love to talk in plain language. I don't want to be misunderstood. You see, I don't think it's talked about enough in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and yet I've been around here long enough to watch these people as they come and they go and they come and they go and they come and they go. If you think you're going to come in here and continue to do what you've been doing and get by with it and stay sober, I got news for you. That is not what our program teaches us. It teaches us how to get away from these things, not how to get away with them. You know, there is a difference. But, of course, you know how we are. You know, we're going to try to keep getting away with them because this time it's going to be different. Now I'm sober, right? Wrong. I've seen too many people go back out, and I damn near lost my own sobriety through this little thing called being in heat. I got a little story to tell you before I go on any further. Okay? Y'all excuse me for a moment. There was this little doggy. Okay? You like little dog stories. Okay? And he lived with his family by a railroad track. Now, y'all pay attention, because there's a moral to this. And he got up this one morning, and it was a beautiful spring day out there, and he wanted to go play. So he gave out a couple yips, and he scratched on the door, you know, and his owner came over, and he let him out, you know. And he run up on this little hill there where the railroad track was, and he was sniffing the flowers and sniffing the weeds. And his little ears were flapping in the wind, you know, and he was just having a marvelous time. And all of a sudden, a train come along and cut off a little tiny peeny wee of his tail. Well, he lit out a yip, and he turned around to see what the heck happened to that little tiny piece of tail. And a train come along from the other direction and cut off his head. Now, honey, don't you be like that little dog and lose your head over that little piece of tail. Now, my mama told me that story when I was only about 13 or 14 years old. I wished I'd have remembered it, you know. But here I was, and I knew I was in trouble, and I knew I had to do something about it. So anyway, I gathered these babies up, and you know, what we give away is what we find. And I taught them the same things that my sponsor had been telling me. Is, honey, you get a good, firm, basic foundation of this program. You don't make any major decisions for at least a year, and you don't get emotionally involved. And then I changed it just a little tiny weeny bit. That's all it takes. Remember that. Just a little bit. And I said, but if you need to get laid, that's all right. Now, you laugh. You know, I figured if they could get laid without getting emotionally involved, they could come back and tell me how, and I'd be okay. Well, I thought it was a fantastic idea. But it didn't work. Have you ever asked anybody how they've done this? Doesn't work. Well, I didn't know what to do. You know, and you guys are laughing. Let me tell you something. You know, I have been privileged to hold some of y'all in my arms. Now, I used to think that it was, when I first sobered up, that it was always poor little Nell that always had the wrong end of the stick, you know, that you guys just walked out of these affairs, you know, absolutely free, no pain, nothing, you know. And I have found out, girls, that I've been very wrong about this. I've held some of you men in my arms as you've come to a Hugh and myself, you know, to talk about these little affairs you've been practicing your principles in. And you cried. And I got to tell you, girls, these guys hurt just like we do. So let's try to remember to be as honest and as kind and gentle with them as we would want them to be with us. I think that this thing works two ways here. Anyway. I do believe that it's very important. But anyway, girls, I got to tell y'all something else, too. You know, in this book, it says we're reborn. I'm going to get a little facetious here. You know, I don't care whether you are the biggest streetwalker, I'll clean it up, out there on the streets. When you come into Alcoholics Anonymous, when you walk through those doors, you are reborn. You have become a virgin all over again. You laugh. If you don't believe me, you watch these men watching these newcomer women. They can't hardly wait to be the first one. You laugh. Remember, guys, not only are there a bunch of dirty old men in this program helping women with their spiritual programs, there's a bunch of dirty old women in here helping guys with their spiritual program, too. Yeah. So that, you know, I have found that there's always a flip side to these coins. You know, it used to be when I came into the program that I used to hear a lot, and I used to hear this of all the places was at the Nest, because they were losing a lot of these guys, you know, from there. And the old-timers used to tell these men, you know, don't get emotionally involved, because behind every slip there is a skirt. You ever heard that expression? Honey, don't you sit there and laugh, because behind every slipper there's a zipper, too. No. I kid you not, you know. Oh. Anyway, I'm in trouble, and I know I got to do something about it. So I've gone through, you know, the open-mindedness and willingness. And now, you know, I know that I've got to do something. And so I've got to find out what my morals were. Because I've got to tell you, you know, principles are the actions that I take on a daily basis. That's what, you know, that reflects the principles that I'm living by. And I come to find out, you know, that it wasn't principles that had been my problem in my life. It was the principles that I had been living by that were my problem. And in looking back, I began to find out that the actions that I had been taking, the principles that I had, went against my own moral concepts, my own morals. And when you go against your own morals, you become a very divided person. You know, and when you become divided against yourself, you really don't like yourself. And when you don't like yourself, you don't like other people very much, you know. And you're really in trouble here. And this is where I was. Even in my sobriety, I, you know, was trying to get it together. And these were some of the things that I had discovered. Because I'm scared to death that if I don't get it together, I'm going to end up back on the juice again. Because my book tells me so. And it says my only out is this spiritual path. So I got in and I went into the fourth step, and there was where the principle I found of truth. And I began to do some fact-facing and some finding outs about myself with this truth of the principle that I had found there. And I didn't like everything that I found, I'll tell you. And I knew I had to make some changes. Now, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have found, you know, a few things. And I went on to the fifth step then, because I had to keep moving on up here because I'm scared to death I'm going to get drunk. And I went into that fifth step, and it says that we have to tell all of our life story to someone. All of it. And it says if we don't do this, we may not overcome drinking. Well, that kind of scared me a little bit. And then I read on in the next sentence, and it says almost invariably we drank again. Well, that scared the living hell right out of me, you know, and I'm ready to take some more action. Now, in the book here, My sponsor had me writing in my book here, and you know, on my first blank page, she had me write down women's telephone numbers. You know, she told me one day, she said, "Beverly, you look like a woman, and you act like a woman, and you dress like a woman, and occasionally you talk like one. However, I don't think you know what the role of a woman is." And she said, "I want you to go to some women's stag meetings." I looked over here, and I said, "No way am I going in those women's stag meetings with those gossiping, backstabbing bitches." You know how we are when we get here. You know, we're not looking for women. You know, we want to get some spiritual help. Well, anyway, she said, "Go," and I went. Now, I found some gossiping, backstabbing bitches in there. However, what I did find also was some very warm, wonderful women who literally saved my life. Now, over here on this next blank page, she also wrote emergency page up there, and she said, "As you read your book, I want you to mark it." And she said, "And as you come across something that's important to you," she said, "I want you to write down the page number and a little synopsis about what's on that page." And so I did. And anyway, this one day, I remembered, she said, "Go to that page because I know I'm in trouble and I'm trying to find the solution to this secondary problem I've got, because if I don't find the solution to the secondary, I'm going to be back to the primary." So I opened up my book looking for this problem, because you know the answer's here in the book. First page number in my book was where my answer was to that problem. It was where the problem was, not the answer. You know what page number that was. Have you read your book? Page 69. I couldn't believe it was a dirty book. Well, I turned that page over, and on page 70, you're going to find your solution. Because in there it says, "If we are truly sorry for what we have done and have asked God to take us on to better things, we believe we will have been forgiven and will have learned our lesson. But if we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink again. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our own experiences." And again, put the fear right back in me again. And I knew I had to do something. So I got into this inventory. I took the inventory. And I'll swear to God, on page 62, I found myself. Now, I had never identified with page 62, but I took this inventory, and let me tell you what I found there. It said that the kind of men that I went for had charm, polish, and prestige. After all, that's only befitting of us. We deserve that, right? He was good-looking, fun-loving, party-going, hard-drinking, woman chasing. God, what a challenge, and I got him. God damn near kill me, but I got him. You men do the same thing. You do exactly the same thing. I know I'm talking a few minutes over. And then I remembered again, and I remembered it from my Sunday school days, and it was in red. Now, if you went to the kind of Sunday school I did, they taught you that when anything is in the Bible and it's in red, it's God talking, right? And the way I remembered it was, he said, "I have created man in my image, and for man I have created woman. And woman is to follow man." And I thought about that for a little while, and I thought, "Now I followed three, you sons of bitches, and look where I ended up at." You know, the nut house in Alcoholics Anonymous. Something was wrong somewhere. So I went back into the Bible, and I began looking for it, and I found it in two separate places. And sure enough, it said, "I have created man in my image, and for man I have made woman as a helpmate. And woman is to follow man, and man follows God." Never finished reading the directions, story of my life, you know. Read this book and follow the directions. It helps, I'll tell you. Anyway, I'm going to have to cut it off here. One of the things that I had found in there when I read that and I realized where I was and how it was talking about me on page 62, where it says, "So our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourself. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-willed run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible." Again, fear and pain was back in my life. And so I thought, what am I going to do? Now, I have found some things for me. That in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe there to be a message. And I believe that to be a message of love. And I have found a theme here. And I believe that theme is one drunk helping another. You know, Dr. Bob had said to Bill one day when they were talking, he said, Bill, he said, love and service is what keeps us dry. And Bill turned around and he looked at him and he said, yeah, Bob, you're right. But he said, always we must remember that our first duty is face-to-face help for the alcoholic who still suffers. And I don't care whether you're brand new or 50 years sober. You know, we still need each other. That's what the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is about. And I got into that fifth step, and I knew I had to tell someone all my life story, and I had to go to my sponsor with it, and I was scared to death because I was afraid she'd throw me out of her house. And not only would she throw me out of her house, but she would come here to these meetings and tell you people about me, and then you would ask me to leave AA. But again, I went back into my book, and I found the answer for me there that allowed me to do what I had to do in that fifth step. And it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands our darkest past is the greatest possession we have. For that is the key to life and happiness, and with that key we avert death and misery for others. And how I applied that to my life, because you see, that gave me the freedom then to go to my sponsor and to tell her about myself. And ever since then, I've been able to live my life and tell my story to anyone, anywhere, who I thought it would be of any benefit to. As I went to my sponsor and I shared my story with her, and she shared a part of hers with me, we developed a relationship, and that became a relationship of love. And as I stayed sober and I began to help other women, alcoholics, we also began to develop relationships, and they too became relationships of love. And isn't love God, and isn't God spiritual, and isn't that what our whole program is all about? Isn't that what keeps us sober? This spiritual path that we follow, one path. And as I close here tonight, I want to wish for each and every one of you all of the things that I have found, all of the joys, all of the sadnesses, all of the sorrows, the happinesses, the pain, the contentment, the joy, the serenity. Because you see, these things are life. And life I have found right here with you in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you very much. It had never once occurred to me to follow a man who followed God.